my first semester at SUU, that was 2008. That was so long ago. I've been taking the regular amount of credits and everything, so I wasn't like too incredibly stressed out. I just didn't have like a lot of money at the time. I wasn't working as much as I'd like to. So, I mean, I was kind of depressed that way, and I didn't have too many friends. Not that it didn't like help me at all that way. I had a bunch of people that I could talk to. I just kind of like to bottle my feelings up a bit more, and I felt like that kind of exacerbated a lot of things for me.
This is Scott. I've known Scott since college. We both started school in fall 2008. He reached out to me with some stories about SUU when I was working on my SUU episodes. But Scott's experiences go beyond the scope of a haunted theater at a small university. So he gets his own episode. And before we get into the spooky stuff, I want to include a warning. We're going to talk about suicidal ideation and a suicide attempt. The nature of the story requires us to discuss the method of the attempt, so if that's not something you feel okay engaging with, maybe give this one a miss. You could go check out another episode. Ghost Horse is fun. Also, if you or a loved one are struggling with suicidal ideation, please reach out for help. There will be hotlines and resources linked in the show notes. Now, without further ado, I'm Dory Peacock, and this is The Ghost Box.
I remember it was the, like, the very last day before, like, the theater final, and I believe that day I lost my job, and I was kind of, like, super high-strung the whole day, and, like, I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't feel like I could talk to my family or anything like that. I just had this, like, overwhelming feeling come over me. And I felt like I needed to, like, escape. I guess it should add in a trigger warning. Like, I did have suicidal tendencies in my mind at that time. Like, I wanted to, like, not have to deal with it anymore. I mean, the way that I thought it would be best would be to, like, do it, to try and go out quick. I didn't want to, like, draw it out, I guess. And the way that I thought about doing it was at the Adams Theater. There's a... Oh gosh, it's a pretty tall building because it is a theater. And I don't know why it just popped into my head that, like, hey, there's a ladder. You should, like, try and go to the top.
When Scott says the Adams Theater, he's actually talking about the Auditorium Theater. He has the names mixed up. The Adams Theater is the Elizabethan replica he references and which I think he calls the Globe. The Odd is a 50-foot-tall brick building. The ladder Scott is talking about is one of those metal ladders built into the side of a building to allow access to the roof from the outside. It didn't reach all the way to the ground, but it could be accessed from other vantage points on the building, as Scott will explain. I just wanted to pause a minute, help you picture it, and explain the distinction for those of you who have been to the Auditorium Theater.
I really thought that I would, like, jump off of it, and I really, really was scared to do it, but I found myself that night, I'd say, like, It must have been at least past 10, and like it was just nobody around on campus by then. It was a full moon, I remember, because I could see everything on campus, and I just had this most bizarre feeling, like not so much like fear anymore, kind of like adrenaline almost. Right by the Adams Theater is the Globe Theater. I can't remember what it was called. I like to go like sit down in there sometimes. Like I lived pretty close to it. I'd say maybe like 5 minutes away. I'd sit down sometimes at night, and I mean, I'd read books there all the time during the day, but right by there, I just kind of got the strangest feeling most of the time that I was being watched. And I kind of ignored it before that point. And when I was there, though, just walking between the two buildings, the Adams and the Globe Theater, I felt it like I never felt it before, not just like on my back, somebody looking at me from behind. It was from all over, like not even just in front of me, like somebody looking down on me. So there's this, there's like the multiple doors to get into the Adams Theater. And I mean, I wasn't, a weakling by any means. I'd worked manual labor most of my life, pretty strong upperly anyways, so I was able to see that ladder. The only way up was this like awning that like I think the maintenance crew had to get a ladder up to do. And there was this stool, I remember it was from concession stand right there, and then there was like a stool just left over, I think from the Shakespeare Festival season before or after. And I was able to like jump from the stool onto this outer ledge, right? And I was able to pull myself up, and it took like a minute or two to do it, but I did it. I was like lying on my back, and I saw how far up I'd have to go. It kind of it dawned on me like if I really wanted to do this, I need to like do it now and not have any misgivings. So I was climbing up that ladder, like it was again like this overwhelming feeling of people watching me. Like I'd never felt before. I've definitely felt it since. It was like a bunch of, it felt like emotions being thrown at me, and I was like taking them in like a broad spectrum, like anger and concern and loneliness and things like that. But it didn't feel like I was feeling the emotions personally. They were like coming from around me, and I was kind of just feeling that, and somehow I got to the top. It's one of the foggier things of that memory. Everything else is pretty clear except for one part, and I'll get to it soon. Suddenly I was up there, and it was a full moon again, so I could see like the whole way down. It was just on my mind, like a giant weight. Like, do you really want to do this? And that kind of like broke me a bit, and I knew that I didn't want to, or at least in that moment. Like I needed to get down before like I did try and do it. And I did start to walk down the ladder, and this is like the part of the first time I've ever really seen anything paranormal. I've felt a bunch of things, and I've seen things since, but that's the first time I remember seeing anything. And I looked up, and I saw a man standing at the top of the Adams Theater, the top of that water ledge, and he was there with a small boy, and I could like see them. It wasn't like see through them, but like they were like almost solid, and they're like there in the moonlight, and that kind of freaked me out a bit. But I kind of that's the other part that I kind of don't remember. And I know I turned around to look over my shoulder and down like by the Adams Theater and towards the doors, as like a group of kids. At least that's what they looked like little kids. And I never like felt that way again, like I said. Just felt like emotion was being like just tossed around all over. And I don't remember getting back down the ladder. That's another thing I can't really grasp. Like, did I get down the ladder? Did I fall? Because I remember like kind of like waking up, I'd say, even though I don't think I passed out or fell asleep, like on my back, on that ledge where the ladder started, and looking up, and I couldn't see anything anymore. And then I don't know if I dropped down or something else. I might have just jumped and then just started. And I just ran home after that, like down the quad, through SEU, like over to the part of town that I lived in.
This would not be Scott's last experience. It wouldn't even be his last on campus.
After that, I don't know. I felt like the veil kind of like got lifted from me a little bit more. Or at least I was more accepting of that kind of stuff. That was a few years later. I hadn't gone back to SUU to like go to classes anymore, but I still went on to campus occasionally, and then like go to improv workshops there on Friday nights, or Friday days before the Friday nights for the shows that Off the Cuff would do. And I remember one time, it must have been in winter, because by the time we got out of the improv workshop, it was dark outside, and I do remember wearing a coat. Had to walk across the quad to get to the street that I lived on. It was still near campus, but it was a different house, so it was kind of a different trek. By that time, I know that the Carter Carillon was up there, the clock tower there. And it's strange for me. The incident that happened at the Adams, I felt kind of more like almost something like latched on to me, or it was like near me a lot. It felt like that presence again. And when I was like walking on the stairs, because there's these stairs that would go down and you could walk underneath the Carter Carillon. And then I think if I remember right, there's more stairs that went into the lower quad or down into the Sherwin Smith Center. And it was like that first set of stairs. I just felt something like push me. And I fell down that first step, like the first one at the top, and then I just like saw everything turning and turning and turning, and I like stopped right underneath the Carter Carillon. I heard this lady laughing, and I didn't see her, but it felt like super familiar, like I knew her somehow, but she was dead, and she was playing a joke on me. That's what it felt like. And I got up, and I didn't feel hurt. I felt like winded, and I just looked around me, and I couldn't see anything again. I felt it like she was almost standing next to me, and then I just didn't want to stay there anymore. I ran down the second set of stairs to get to the lower quad. I don't feel like she followed me after that, but I've had a few close encounters with that entity again. There's another story I could tell, if that's okay.
Yeah, please, about that same entity.
Yeah. So I know that some of the people might know that I had an accident in Cedar City that kind of like really screwed me up. I got my hand caught in the machine that I worked with in the job that I had, and it was it's a metal recycling yard, and it was a lot of physical labor there, a lot of stuff that I'd learned how to do, and I did a lot. I was able to do some of the harder stuff, and able to do the stuff that I wanted to learn how to do. But this particular machine, it's called a wire stripper, just to get a little bit of a idea of what it could do. It was kind of trapezoid, kind of. It was smaller on the base, and it went off in angles, and then it was taller at the top. It had these bars that were going through it that had teeth on them. So that's the blades, but they're called teeth. They were smaller and closer together on the left side, and thicker and further apart on the right side. So it was clearly where you would need to put the wire that you wanted to put through to cut off the insulation, and also the any of the like plastic cover that's on it. So you get down to the bare copper, and I'd done that machine a whole bunch of times before. I felt like I was not an amateur at it. I'd done it a bunch of times. I'd felt the kind of like ease that you get when you get muscle memory. And I was, I remember it was for the rest of a bunch of copper wire, the much bigger gauge than I usually would put through the machine, because it had a safety mechanism on it that was a plate that would have different hole sizes for the gauges that you would put on the front mounting, so that your hand wouldn't get caught on there, and you just put the copper through. But that wasn't really needed sometimes, even though it was a big safety no-no. We took the plate off, and these the bars with the teeth, you could adjust, and they would go two little levers on the top. You would turn counterclockwise, and it would open up, and clockwise to tighten, so you could get a better grip on whatever you wanted to pass through this machine. And It has a lot of power. You can feel it when you like pass a core through, and you could hear the crunch of it, like opening up the insulation and the plastic covering to get to the copper core underneath. So that's just how it works, and just kind of the dangers that you could have with it. And that particular morning, it was I'll remember it for the rest of my life, but it was April 11th. I even remember the time, which was 9:30 in the morning, because I looked at my phone like 2 minutes before, and 9:28, so it must have been about 2 minutes into this. And I'd been wearing my bulky winter gloves, and it was kind of like a slow motion thing. Like I could see it happening. I just like got this intense feeling, and I looked down, and my hand was going into the machine with the core. I was holding on to it, but then that same feeling I'd felt before, that same kind of thing, the entity, it felt like it was holding my hand on top of mine, and the machine stopped. It didn't like keep going, and I didn't hit the emergency stop. And the guy that was there with me told me he didn't hit it either. I didn't see the hand, but I felt it. Another thing I was unclear on with that particular instance was, I don't know if I lifted the teeth apart, like with the knobs on the top, or if they did it themselves, but somehow my hand got out of it, and then it was just kind of like a rush of adrenaline and just shock. So I don't know if I felt much of anything else past that, but I haven't told many people that, and I should be dead by all accounts, because that machine should have taken my arm like a foot a second, and there wouldn't have been much anybody could have done to stop it. I don't know. It was just a experience that I think about every so often. Like, I obviously supposed to be alive for some reason. It was not the last time I felt that entity. It was much further down the road. But I don't have to get into that story.
I mean, you can if you want to, but I'm not going to press you for anything that's too personal.
Oh, it's later on. I did a lot more, like, I do a lot more tarot now. I found I'm pretty good at reading people, at least like their emotions and just their kind of like overall feelings and aura kind of. And I've done a few spirit board, Ouija board, if you want to call it that, sessions. And one in particular, I felt the same entity again. And I asked it what its name was. And the answer I got kind of like blew me away a little. And it was, I'm adopted, but my birth mother's name, that's what it said it was. And I don't know how many people knew that name, like her full name, not just her, like, her maiden name too. Rebecca Case Bentley. So it was kind of like a flip the table, like freaking out moment. That one was a little like maybe she's just followed me around all these years, and just like I don't know, might have just wanted to communicate. I never Well, I haven't talked to that spirit since. If it is my mom, I don't know.
Has your birth mom passed on?
Yes. A couple years ago, my, well, I think of her as my mom. My adopted mom, she gave me this article that talked about it. So my biological parents weren't the best people in the world, and they were homeless for a good majority of my life. And then they're like some of the homeless people in downtown Salt Lake. And they were on in that McDonald's over kind of like by 900 South. Do you know where that is?
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the article, she literally died in that McDonald's. And that was like 2006. I don't know why, like, it would push me downstairs and then like save me from dying. Maybe it just felt like it at the time. I have no idea. I've not tried to talk to it since then. If it is, I don't want to say it is or not. So that take it as you will, I suppose.
Wow, and you haven't communicated with it since the Ouija board incident, but do you sometimes still feel it?
I've done a lot more meditation and a lot more stuff to, like, I'd say, like, guard myself mentally a bit more. Because I would, like, get all these feelings a lot because, again, I didn't know I was an empath till later on in life, and it would always make me, like, really angry when I didn't need to be, or really sad when I didn't want to be sad. And then I was able to kind of control that a bit more. Since I was able to do that, I didn't feel that entity anymore per se, but every so often I will, but not in like my house or anywhere like that. It's always out in the open.
So the entity from the clock tower continued to be a presence in Scott's life, but the lead I buried is that the group of children at the theater was not the last ghostly crowd Scott would encounter.
Did you ever read a book called The Christmas Box?
I didn't read it, but I knew about it.
Okay, yeah. And the guy who wrote it started a company called Christmas Box International, which was a lot to do with adoption and things like that. And they had an actual Christmas Box house, and I stayed there when I was two, and I remember it. And it was the story with it, though, I'll kind of speed that one along a little bit more. There's a Christmas Box angel in the Salt Lake City Cemetery that's for all the children that have died or have been like neglected or forgotten. And on, I think it's the 6th of December, you could go in with flowers, and a bunch of people will bring candles, and they'll do a candlelit vigil just for remembrance and things. And I kind of, once I moved back to Salt Lake, kind of wanted to give back a bit, so I did that a few times. The last time I did it, though, it was like the year I was gonna like move out of Salt Lake finally, and it was watershed thing for me to be able to move and to go elsewhere. And it was kind of a weird day that day. I felt a lot more like a tuning fork instead of like being able to block things out. And I felt like a bit more in tune, I would say. But anyways, at this particular one, I just remember that we were at the candlelit vigil, at least I was, and my sister-in-law was, and I look over at the statue and I could see, like, just a bunch of spirits there. A bunch of children. They're, like, gathered around the statue. And it was, like, full-body apparitions again. I couldn't see through them. It was like they were there for me. It was a lot of them, too. It wasn't just two or three. I'd say, like, two or three dozen just sitting around the statue.
I'm not going to speculate on whether or not the entity that seems to follow Scott is actually his birth mother, or who the children were at the angel statue. After all, the most intriguing thing about ghost stories is the mystery, the idea that maybe there's more to existence than what we see. What intrigues me most about this story is the possibility that wherever we are, maybe someone or some people are there when we need them, even if we don't always see them. Listening. The Ghost Box is written, produced, hosted, and all the stuff by me, Dory Peacock, with special help from my four-legged furry production assistant, George Moosington Adams, because of course my cat is a lawyer, with music and scoring by Parker B. Abeg. You can follow Parker on all the socials at Parker B. Abeg. And ladies, he's single. I want to thank Scott for sharing his stories with me, and I want to thank all of you for listening. Scott told me a lot of stories. Not all of them would fit in this episode, so you can go over to patreon.com, become a patron, and listen to Scott's bonus stories. For those of you not in the know, patreon.com is this nifty website where you can give small monthly donations to independent little creators like yours truly, and in turn you receive cool bonus content like extra ghost stories, and hopefully, I know I've been promising this forever, I really am gonna get it figured out, you guys, hopefully some AMA streams. So hop over to patreon.com/theghostboxpod, I'll have a link in the show notes, and sign up for the donation level that suits your need and get that delicious, delicious bonus content. Also, if you have a story that you think would be good for the show, please reach out. You can email us at theghostboxpod@gmail.com or slide into our DMs on Instagram and Twitter at theghostboxpod. You can also call our paranormal hotline at 801-410-4315 and leave a detailed message. That's 801-410-4315. Whether you call, DM, or email, give us a short description of your story, and if we think it's great for the show, we'll get in touch. And finally, if you enjoyed the show, please rate and review on iTunes. Like it, tweet about it, talk about it, tell your friends, tell your mom. And if you didn't like it, then maybe I'll send my army of ghost children after you. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Stay spooky.
In the story, sorry, my cat's climbing over the keyboard, but she's awesome, so I'll give her a pass. But anyways, the kitty, stop.